This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, everybody. This is Dave, and it is time for the sports. Over the next half hour, we'll be reading about what's on the air today, what upcoming events are in store for our local teams, and we'll read some of the selected articles from the Cincinnati Enquirer sports section for Tuesday, May the 14th. First up, on the air. Major League Baseball, Philadelphia at the New York Mets, 1 p.m. on the MLB Network. The Yankees at Minnesota, 1:30 p.m. on TBS. The Reds at Arizona, 9:40 p.m. on the Bally Sports Ohio TV channel and on radio on 700 WLW. In Colorado at San Diego, will be joined in progress at 10:30 p.m. on the MLB Network. NBA basketball, the NBA Draft Combine will be on television this afternoon at 1 p.m. on ESPN2. Eastern Conference playoff action has Indiana at New York and Madison Square Garden, 8 p.m. on TNT. And in the Western Conference, Minnesota will be at Denver. That's at 10:30 p.m. on TNT. NHL hockey, Eastern Conference playoffs, Boston at Florida, 7 p.m. on ESPN. Western Conference playoffs has Vancouver at Edmonton. That's at 9:30 p.m. on ESPN. Men's soccer today in the English Premier League, Manchester City will be at Tottenham Hotspur, 3 p.m. on the USA Network. And WNBA basketball tonight has Indiana featuring Caitlin Clark at Connecticut. That's at 7:30 p.m. on ESPN2. And Phoenix will be at Las Vegas. That will be at 10 p.m. on ESPN2. Here are your upcoming events. FC Cincinnati. Tomorrow, that's Wednesday, they are home against Atlanta. Kickoff is at 7:30. Saturday, they're home against St. Louis at 7:30. And May the 25th, they're at Toronto. That game will be at 7:30 p.m. The Cincinnati Reds play the second of a three-game series against the Diamondbacks out in Phoenix. Game time today is at 9:40 p.m. Tomorrow, their game is a business day special in Phoenix against the Diamondbacks. The first pitch is scheduled for 3:40 p.m. That's Cincinnati time. And on Thursday, they begin a weekend series against the Los Angeles Dodgers. Thursday's game starts at 10:10 p.m. The Florence Yoles season is in high gear. Today, they play at Windy City at 11:35 a.m. On Wednesday, they are at Windy City at 11:35. And on Thursday, they have an 11:35 a.m. at Cincinnati time. They have a game against Windy City. Now we'll turn to the front page. The first article today starts at the very top of the page with the headline, Men's Basketball Report. Crosstown Shootout is December the 14th. This article is written by Shelby Dermer. Cincinnati's biggest day of college basketball has a date for the 24-25 season. According to a report from CBS Sports John Rothstein, the Crosstown Shootout will be played on Saturday, December the 14th at Fifth Third Arena between the Xavier University Musketeers and the University of Cincinnati Bearcats men's basketball teams. December brings the 92nd meeting between Xavier and UC. The Bearcats lead the all-time series 51-40. Xavier has won five consecutive games in the rivalry after pulling out an 84-79 win at Cintas Center last season. It's the biggest game on our schedule, and it's the most meaningful game to our fans, former players, and students, Xavier head coach Sean Miller said, leading up to last season's matchup. UC has not won at Xavier since 2001, and the Bearcats' last victory in the rivalry was 2018 at Fifth Third Arena. Xavier's Miller is 5-2 all-time in the shootout, while UC head coach Wes Miller is searching for his first win over the Musketeers, as he has a record of no wins and three losses. Looking now toward the center of the front page, The article's headline, "It's Not Time to Panic About the Reds, But..." This is from Jason Williams. You can ask Jason Williams anything, sports or non-sports, and he'll pick up some of your questions and respond on Cincinnati.com. He can be emailed at jwilliams@inquirer.com or message, "Yes, this season is still relatively young, and no, the Reds will not continue to hit .205 collectively, but I get the sense that anything from here may be too little too late. Do the Reds need to make a move to bring in firepower? Who would be most likely to get the axe if Nick Kroll pulled the trigger?" Here's Jason Williams' reply. "It certainly feels like the Reds season is on the brink of being lost. Everything is working against the Reds right now, the schedule and the injuries. They have no margin for error. But it's not the time to panic. The schedule finally starts to lighten up following this next homestand. After 13 more games against the rugged National League West, I don't think the next 13 games are going to define this season, unless the Reds only win a couple of them. For perspective, the Reds' record was similar at this time last year. They were 17-21 through May 12th last season. They're 17-23 after Sunday's loss in San Francisco. A big difference. The Reds had hot prospects on the verge of coming up to jolt the lineup at this time in 2023. Excitement was building for Matt McClain, who came up May 15th. Eloy De La Cruz came up June 6th. The Reds do not have any potential difference-making position player prospects who are ready to come up right now. One reason not to freak out yet. The starting pitching has been strong top to bottom. Graham Ashcraft had the rotation's highest ERA entering Sunday at 3.86. The Reds should stay competitive if the rotation keeps this up. As such, the Reds need to do everything they can to make a move and jumpstart the lineup. Kroll, president of baseball operations, is actively looking to make a deal, according to the Inquirer Reds reporter Gordon Wittenmeyer's scoop last week. What could the Reds look to trade, or who could the Reds look to trade? For starters, they should aggressively swap Christian Encarnacion-Strand and maybe Jonathan India. The Reds have some pitching prospects they could probably deal too. They'll have to wait on shopping CES, that's Mr. Strand, who's out at least a month with a broken wrist. What we've seen from the first baseman this season is what to expect. CES is a feast or famine hitter, and he just doesn't seem to fit on a team built around pitching, defense, and getting on base and running. Yeah, you need home run power to drive in all those small ball guys, but CES is 2 home runs and a sub-200 batting average with 35 strikeouts and a poor on-base percentage shows he's too one-dimensional. The Reds should have traded him last season, and they may be stuck with him now. As for India, the Reds made the right decision not to trade him in the offseason. At the time, it looked like his leadership would be needed. And then McClain went down in spring training with the shoulder injury, opening the door for India to return to second base. But now, the lineup needs a jolt, and India is not in the Reds' long-term plans. It's a good sign that Kroll is not waiting until closer to the August 1st deadline to start looking to make a move. That's when it might be too little and too late. We'll turn to the Bengals for our third article of the day. Begins in a right-hand column, the front page, the headline, "Bengals schedule for 2024 to be released on Wednesday." This article is written by Hazdia Agwude and Jason Hoffman. Football fans, the wait is almost over. On Monday, the NFL announced it will release the 2024 schedules for all 32 teams this week, including the Cincinnati Bengals. But what day and time will they come out, and who do the Bengals play this year? Here's what we do know. When will the NFL schedule be released? The entire NFL schedule will come out at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday, May 15th. How to watch the 2024 NFL schedule release. The NFL Network and ESPN will both host scheduled release coverage at 8 p.m. on Wednesday. When is the first game of the 2024 NFL season? The 2023 Super Bowl champions Kansas City Chiefs will open the 2024 season September the 5th against the Baltimore Ravens at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. Fans can watch the season opener on NBC and Peacock. Cincinnati Bengals 2024 opponents. The Bengals' 2024 opponents were set December the 31st. Although we know who the Bengals will play, we're still waiting to find out when the games will take place. Here's a look at Cincinnati's 2024 opponents in alphabetical order. Baltimore Ravens, they will play home and away. The Carolina Panthers, they'll play away. The Cleveland Browns, they play home and away. The Dallas Cowboys, they'll play away. The Denver Broncos will be played at home. Kansas City Chiefs, unfortunately, will be at Arrowhead Stadium. The Las Vegas Raiders will be at home. The Los Angeles Chargers will be away. The New England Patriots will be at home. The New York Giants will be away. The Philadelphia Eagles will be at home. The Pittsburgh Steelers home and away. The Tennessee Titans will be away. And the Washington Commanders will be at home. How is the NFL schedule created? The Bengals finished fourth in their division, so they'll play a fourth-place schedule against the rest of the AFC. That's why they faced the Titans and the Patriots, who also finished fourth in their divisions. The NFL also has each division play against two other divisions, and this year the Bengals will play against the AFC West and the NFC East for a total of eight games. Teams can play two games against the opponents in their own divisions, comprising six of the 17 games. That's 16 of the 17 games the Bengals will play. The last game is against a non-conference opponent based on final standings from the previous season. That's where the trip to face the Panthers comes into play, which fills out the 17-game schedule. How many primetime games does the NFL team have? NFL teams are no longer guaranteed a primetime game, but teams limited to no more than six primetime games during the season. The NFL also has exclusive rights to flex games in the final week of the season if needed. The final week is division-only games, meaning the Bengals will either play the Browns, the Ravens, or the Steelers. We'll turn to page D3 now for our fourth article this morning. The headline, Reds Fraley Still Working Back from Bronchitis. This is written by Charlie Goldsmith. Dateline San Francisco. In late April, when the Cincinnati Reds were in the middle of a series against the San Diego Padres, Reds manager David Bell and head trainer Sean McQueeny met with outfielder Jake Fraley. They were concerned about the bad cough that Fraley was trying to play through. Even though Fraley's cough kept getting worse and worse, and even though he experienced shortness of breath, Fraley tried to power through just like he did last September when he played with a broken toe. Bell and McQueeny told Fraley that they were really concerned and that he should take a few days to figure this out. During that series, Fraley met with a doctor in San Diego. He said, "You're probably a couple days away from going to the hospital with pneumonia," Fraley said. "It was pretty bad." Fraley was trying to play through bronchitis. Between April the 21st and April the 27th, Fraley was out of the lineup as he recovered. On April the 27th, Fraley met with a doctor in Texas who told him that he could start playing again if he took antibiotics. He returned for three games and then took three more days off before meeting with a doctor in San Diego. In the process, Fraley lost 9 pounds and his body fat dropped to about 8%. "When you have bronchitis, you need to do nothing," Fraley said. "It's something within your lungs and your respiratory tract. You have phlegm and mucus that's all stuck in there. You don't get time for all of that to heal itself when you're running around constantly. When that stuff sits in your respiratory tract, it eventually gets into your lungs, which eventually turns into pneumonia. Fraley caught himself just in time. If it turns into pneumonia, once you go into the hospital, you'll be there for weeks, Fraley said. Fraley returned to the Reds lineup for good on May the 3rd, and he's fully healthy now, despite an ongoing cough. His biggest concern is May has been building his strength back up. Since Fraley developed bronchitis in April, he's only hitting .219 with a slight .505 on-base plus slugging percentage, OPS, entering Sunday's game against the San Francisco Giants. I still feel weak at times, Fraley said. I've only gained about 2 pounds of it back, and I'm still down 7. It just feels like I have my blinders on, and I am taking it a day at a time until I feel completely back to normal. Fraley has changed his diet to get his strength back. He's eating more fatty foods like nuts and avocados. He has a personal chef in Cincinnati who has put more calories in everything he eats, and Fraley has more calories than he usually does in the pregame and postgame shakes he drinks. He's also going back into a rhythm in the weight room to build his muscle mass back up. It's been an uphill battle, Fraley said. I'm taking it one day at a time and doing my thing. You make the best of it. With what I'm going through, I'm happy it's a 162-game season. We've got a lot of baseball left. I'll get the weight back and get the strength back. It's just a matter of time. We'll turn now to page D5 for our next article. It's about baseball, but not the Reds. The headline, Skeens hits 102 miles an hour in Major League debut. This article is written by Gabe Laquez of the USA Today. And that last name of the author is L-A-C-Q-U-E-S. Electric. Occasionally dominant and ultimately just a tease to coming attractions. Paul Skeens brought the most dominant fastball in baseball to his Major League debut on Saturday afternoon before a full house at PNC Park that came to see the 6'6" rookie who offers more hope than the Pittsburgh Pirates have seen in years. And for the first strikeout on a 101-mile-an-hour fastball to the standing ovation the crowd of 334,924 offered him upon his exit, Skeens did not disappoint. Oh, he did not walk away from his first career start with a win. The Pirates have been carefully monitoring his buildup and his workload, and from that standpoint, Saturday was just the next episode. So when manager Derek Sheldon removed him after 84 pitches with a 5-run lead, 2 batters into the top of the 5th inning, the crowd did not boo. Rather, they saluted the glimpse of power pitching Skeens offered in the launch of a highly promising career. Skeens was drafted number 1 overall out of LSU less than a year ago. He struck out 7 Chicago Cubs in 4-plus innings on Saturday and was lifted from the game with a 6-1 lead. His afternoon ended on an infield single from Senior Suzuki, the 6th hit he yielded, and his pitching line will reflect 3 earned runs given up, with reliever Kyle Nicholas walking 3 batters and hitting another, allowing both of Skeens' runners left on base to score. The Pirates, ruining their own narratives for the better part of 3 decades, did not shy away from the fate on this day, as Josh Fleming and Nicholas combined to enable the Cubs to tie the score 6-6 without a single ball leaving the infield. And then came a torrential downpour, umpires calling a delay just 1 out shy of it becoming an official game. The Pirates walked in 2 more runs upon the game's resumption. It somehow survived to claim a 10-9 victory over the Cubs. Hours earlier, before getting the hook, Skeens showed off a starting repertoire. He threw 24 pitches of at least 100 miles an hour, topping out at 102 in the first inning. He flashed a wipeout slider and a highly effective split-finger fastball, which averaged 96 miles an hour, and that Skeens was confident throwing in any count, even to get a strike in a 3-0 situation. The crowd roared when leadoff batter Mike Tauchman fouled a 101-mile-an-hour fastball into the mitt of catcher Yasami Grandal for Skeen's first career strikeout. He blew away Suzuki on three pitches, two of them sliders. And when he ran into trouble in the second inning, loading the bases on a hit batter, walk, and a single, Skeen simply reached back and caught Yan Gomes looking at a 101-mile-an-hour fastball. He got Tauchman to ground to second on the second pitch. That helped drive Skeen's pitch count higher. Another internal battle he'll fight in his young career, dominant strikeout totals versus manageable pitch counts. An 11-pitch third inning helped that cause, but he gave up a one-out first-pitch home run to Nico Horner, who hooked a slider into the first row of the left field seats. Skeens still struck out the side. Ian Happ on a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, Michael Bush on a slider, and Gomes on a split finger. He notched an impressive 52% whiff and called strike percentage on his splitter. From an aesthetic standpoint, the day was a huge success before the rains came. Fans clad in Skeen's jerseys filled the stands, and Skeen's family, along with girlfriend Libby Dunn, watched from a box on the second level. Dunn, the social media maven and national champion gymnast from LSU, and Skeens were just starting out in Pittsburgh, both having spent little time there before Skeens' recall this week. Saturday looked a good bit like the start of a love affair between the player and the city. Pittsburgh has been so supportive. The support here is unreal, Dunn said in a mid-game interview on the Pirates TV broadcast. I have the most confidence in him ever. I know how hard he has worked for this moment. Skeens knew it would not be easy as his epic junior year at LSU when he struck out a staggering 209 batters in 122 and two-thirds innings. But we learned this much on Saturday. His stuff absolutely plays at the major league level, even if he has not been totally unleashed. We're going to try to squeeze in one more baseball article as we turn to page B6 for a final article. The headline, National League Blue Blood on track for dubious mark. This article is written by Gabe Laquez also. St. Louis Cardinals fans entered a rare welcome sight on Sunday. Ryan Helsley on the mound closing a game. After closing a wound, they hope. Helsley had not pitched in 8 days because closers on bad teams are not really necessary, and make no mistake, the Cardinals have been a bad team. They came into Sunday on a 7-game losing streak that included dropping the first 3 games of a key series in Milwaukee. And while a 4-3 win salvaged the finale, the Cardinals have to worry much about the damage that's already been done. St. Louis is 16 wins and 24 losses, already 8 games behind the Brewers and buried in the NFL's central basement. The Cardinals went 71-91 a year ago and have not finished last in the consecutive seasons since 1907 and 1908. They're not yet destined for that fate, but there's not much further for them to fall in the USA Today Sports Power Rankings. And with one quarter of the season elapsed, teams' identities are gradually taking permanent form. A look at our updated MLB power rankings are accordingly. Number one, the LA Dodgers. James Paxton's 2.58 ERA, just more found money. Number two, the Baltimore Orioles. Grayson Rodriguez's return may create a sixth-man rotation, a deep one at that. Number three, the Atlanta Braves. One of these days, Max Fried will knock out Kent Merker down a peg in Braves history. Number four, the Phillies. They are up 2 places from last week. Ranger Suarez, at one point with a 1.50 earned run average, might be your early leader in the Cy Young race. The Yankees are even with last week at number five. Aaron Judge is struggling. Wait, what's that? His 10th homer. Number six, the Cleveland Guardians, who are down 2 points, 2 places from last week. Stephen Kwan's hamstring injury puts month-long pause on breakout year. He was batting 353 with a 953 OPS. The Milwaukee Brewers are up 1 space from last week at number seven. Rhys Hoskins has never received an MVP vote, not even for 10th place. That may change. In 8th place are the Cubs, who are down a position. Shota Imanaga at 1.08 earned run average and a 1.8 WAR, and Javier Assad with a 1.70 ERA and a 1.7 WAR are quite a 1-2 pitching punch. At number 9 are the Seattle Mariners. They're even where they were last week. They have a notorious slow starter in Julio Rodriguez starting to fully emerge. At number 10, the Kansas City Royals, who are down 2 places from last week. Seth Lugo has a 1.66 earned run average, and the team looks as for real as he does. At number 11 are the Minnesota Twins. They're up 2 percentage points, or 2 places in the standings. Carlos Santana, at age 38, homers in consecutive games, yet getting hit in the helmet by a sausage was a career first. In the 12th position, the Texas Rangers, down 2 from last week. You get swept at Coors Field, you drop in the rankings. There are rules to this. Number 13 is the Boston Red Sox, who are plus 1. Brian Bellow wins his first start after a three-week absence with a lat issue. And number 14 are the Padres, who are up 2 positions. They're now 6-3 since the Luis Araz trade. The Tampa Bay Rays are in 15th place, up 3 from last week. It's just 9 games, but Johnny DeLuca has a 930 OPS. Number 16 are the Detroit Tigers, up 1 from last week. After 113 at-bats, Colt Keith is looking for his first Major League home run. And number 17 are the Arizona Diamondbacks, up 6 places from last week, having dropped 4 of 6 extra inning games. And number 18 are the New York Mets, up 1 from last week. Christian Scott with a promising 14-3 strikeout-to-walk ratio through 2 starts. The Cincinnati Reds, who are down 8 percentage points from last week, have lost 10 of 11. Number 20, the Washington Nationals, who are even with last week. They poked their heads briefly above 500 for the first time since July of 2021. And number 21 are the San Francisco Giants, who are even with last week. They lose Michael Conforto to a hamstring injury and Wong Ho Lee to a separated shoulder. Number 22 are the Toronto Blue Jays, who are down 7 positions from last week. No, it's not a make-or-break 3-game series of Baltimore, but it sure feels like it. And number 23, the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Paul Skeen spotlight illustrated an inconsistent club for all to see. And number 24, the Houston Astros, up 1 from last week. Framber Valdez and Justin Verlander lift them to a series win. Normalcy returning? We'll see. And number 25, the Oakland Athletics, up 1 from last week. Brent Rooker is hitting .229 with a 1.012 OPS with 10 home runs. He looks like an all-star again. And number 26 are the St. Louis Cardinals, with Paul Goldschmidt still trying to find a roadmap off the interstate. That means his batting average is under .200, by the way. At number 27, the Los Angeles Angels, equal with last week. They've lost 14 of 19 at home. At number 28 are the Colorado Rockies. They're up 1 from last week. They finally win their first series of the year, sweeping the defending champions. At number 29 are the Marlins, who are down 1 from last week. No one wants to get their butt kicked every night, says manager Skip Shoemaker. But you can't always get what you want. And number 30, and the worst team in baseball, that's exactly where they were last week, are the Chicago White Sox. They are now 9-6 when Tommy Pham plays. There are 3 wins and 23 losses when he doesn't. So you might get the feeling that Mr. Pham is pretty important. 2 sports articles in brief. Super Bowl champ Chiefs to open the season against the Ravens. And next, Bronny James medically cleared by the NBA to attend draft combine. And that is going to do it for sports this Tuesday, May the 14th, as reported by the Cincinnati Inquirer. This is Dave. I'll be back next week with more from the world of sports. And until then, please take care.